This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right,
we're off. Hello, everyone. TBI episode 179.
Boom.
Boom. We've got Elliot Steele in the studio.
Wagwan.
Hello.
Lucas on the ones and twos.
Hello.
Big up, Lucas.
It's going to be fun. So, I've had a triple rum already. it's 11 a.m.
Is everything all right, mate?
Then you went and bought that jacket.
It's fine, man. I can handle it. I love this jacket. It's my new... I bought a whole tracksuit of this.
It's cool.
To be honest, it's not really an outdoor... I'm not wearing the whole tracksuit out yet. It's sort of a house tracksuit. But I thought I'd wear the top half out.
Like a mafiosa.
It's a little bit. Do you know what it is? It's definitely inspired by the fact I've been watching Sopranos.
It's great,
isn't
it?
I started The Sopranos again.
I've done that. I've got this little bracelet on. Right, that's that, and I wear an Adidas.
Watching
BDSM.
A bit of bling, and I wear an Adidas tracksuit every now and then. And as I'm walking through Fulton Heath, I'm like, I need to go into Costa and get them to pay up.
Yes. Start racketeering.
I've been doing my Christmas advent calendar. So today it was Malibu, and Malibu's famously delicious, but it's only 21%. So I thought I'd look up a cocktail that's got Malibu in it. I found one that's a triple rum cocktail. It's fucking delicious. So I put Malibu, Bacardi, and Mount Gay, dark rum.
You mounted a gay.
it's a really lovely Barbados rum.
For drunk now in the morning.
It's a delicious rum.
Whatever age you're going to be, that's still going to be a great thing,
isn't it?
It's
impossible, yeah.
It's like Cockburn.
It's like Knobs Creek whiskey.
yeah, that's worth thinking.
Those three rums, grenadine, pineapple juice, so strong, but so... It tastes like Umbongo, genuinely. And I downed it at 9 a.m.
Does it fuck your day up a little bit?
No, it makes everything great.
Not doing that fucks your day up.
Yeah, of course. What are you talking about?
I had my first... I hadn't drunk a little... I mean, like sort of like 12 days or something. And last night I had a few beers. And I woke up today, man, and I felt... With comedy, sometimes I'll go out, I'll have a few beers... And like, just do it consistently to the point where I could get up and crackle with my day, no problem. When you ain't done it for a while, you're like, this shit's poison.
Yeah. It's also, there's no like rhyme nor reason to it. I think when I was 18, I mean, you're younger, obviously. So it's like, for me though,
how old are you, Elliot, now?
26.
When I was 18 or even like 18 to 25, probably, I could drink, like, my hangovers were totally based on how much I drank. So if I drank, if I had 5 pints, I'd be fine. If I had 10 pints, I'd be a bit fucked. Mm. And if I had 10 pints shot on a night out drink, I'd be ruined the next day, right? Whereas now, there's absolutely no rhyme nor reason. Once I've got to 40, like I can go out and have 10 pints on just a total surprise night out. I'll wake up the next day and I'm just fine. Or I'll go for 4 pints with a mate in a pub, and the next morning it's like I've been on a stag do. Like, I'm just fucking hanging out my arse.
There's a traffic cone.
It's like your body... waking up next to him.
Yeah. your body's just like, your body just doesn't function as well. So you just can't gauge a hangover anymore. It's not like it used to be like, right, if I call it now, I'll be fine. Now I just drink and just think whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, I had my first cigarette in a little while last night, and
delicious.
Fucking
what flavour?
Tobacco.
Old school.
was it a Marlboro Red?
Granddad.
Yeah, it was a Marlboro Red.
Oh, my God.
One of the best.
You mad bastard. That would kill me, man.
Oh, mate, it was so good.
I like a Roly when I'm having a drink. That's my thing.
Oh, Roly.
I always
regret it, though, if I have a Roly. I always feel like icky afterwards.
No, Rolys don't make me feel icky.
Do you have the mint? The menthol?
No, menthol.
I don't mind. Yeah.
I don't like it. I hate a straight. Because if I'm having a straight, I'm like, something's gone wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I bought a couple of packs after my dad died. Like, so I was just stressed, and so I found myself just like,
what are you stressed about? You have stuff going on, yeah.
But yeah, so I found myself buying a few packs of straight sound again. I hated it. I felt that made me feel worse than if I hadn't have had them.
I think they've got more chemicals in them.
Oh, definitely.
They?
Whereas a Roly, I was buying the Rolys and I've wound it down now. I'll have the old one like if I'm having a drink, whatever. But yeah, the Roly.
Just in the mornings every day. Then.
Out the bathroom windows.
Just want to have a little drink. Three rums this morning.
I love the idea that you've got a Roly out of your mouth, drinking hand, and you're like holding the baby like a 90s parent.
Good 90s parent.
So I went to I've just got back from Euro Disney last night.
Oh, yeah, you went there.
Mate, that is the best place on earth. Honestly, it's the most magical place on the planet.
Especially when you're lagging.
But you see so many just French parents just pushing a buggy with a fag hanging out their mouth.
Yeah.
But they do
it's
it.
So cool,
they do it and it looks cool. And you see it in Croydon High Street.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, you sexy. Fucking wrong.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? The French just have to. I remember I was just when I was about 16 and like I sort of went to Paris with my family, my dad was like, yeah, just fuck off on your own for a bit if you want. And I was like, all right, cool. I've never walked through a foreign city on my own before.
I'm scared, Dad. I'm only six.
and I walked down near where the fucking thing that burnt down.
The Notre
Dame. Diana.
Notre
Dame.
Yeah, I was just walking through a tunnel. I wanted to go pay my respects at 16.
What was that thing that burnt down? Yeah, I just wanted to pay my respects to her.
There was these like French teenagers, but they were drinking a bottle of wine. Sick. And I was like, it was just like, it was underage drinking, but it looked great.
Yeah,
it looked classy.
Whereas
here, it's a bottle of white ice and then the sports centre window
lightning.
Gets smashed.
Yeah. Sports centre window.
We used to drink Super Tenants. That was our thing. We'd drink, like, because we didn't like cider.
It was quite strong, wasn't it, that?
It was, is it 9% lager?
Yeah.
And we used to have to put it in the freezer for an hour to make it palatable.
Oh. Yeah.
If you put, it's a secret for you if you've got a problem drinking.
If you want to get a problem.
Get Super Tenants in the freezer for an hour and you can drink it. It's like, you don't hardly taste it.
Yeah.
I said that like it was such a good life hack.
Get it down your neck, kids.
A bit of motivation with Carl.
Drinking every morning's changed me, man.
We used to do K cider.
Oh, I remember that. That was quite a cool bottle as well, wasn't it?
Oh, it was
black with a little red K.
It was always, and we'd always do it. There was always that thing where you'd put three in a row and you'd be like, oh, bit naughty.
And then it was just
such like an insane thing to be drinking. I don't know why it's teenage, because you don't know how to drink as a teenager. You're still learning it. So every time you drink, you push it to a level where it's not really about enjoying the drink, it's about the idea you're gonna get fucked up. So exciting, you know? Like those first few times where you're like, oh my God, we're gonna go and get fucked up and someone brings a bottle of Malibu.
And you're
like, but no one drinks Malibu really.
Apart from breakfast.
Obviously the breakfast. Most important Malibu of the day.
I mean what was it? Malibu is a breakfast. It's 21%, mate. That's a breakfast.
Yeah, that's simple. A little pick me up.
It was exciting though. It was just getting shit faced when you were a teenager.
I used to have Jack Daniels and Coke really because it couldn't taste like I never really liked the taste. So
yeah.
It was nice.
It's a good drink, Jack Daniels, I think. I know it's like the most obvious whiskey.
I don't like it with Coke though. I don't like Coke.
Towards the end of it, I wouldn't have the Coke or
Coke.
Ice even.
just doing shots of Jack Daniels. Bourbon though is one of the few. Like drinks, I can drink shots of that. I think is quite nice. Like a nice sort of bourbon, just Knobs Creek or something.
I remember getting into Courvoisier for a little while.
Ooh. Ooh.
But only because I was thinking, I'm not an alcoholic. This is classic.
Yeah, I'm a gentleman.
A
bottle of Grey Goose under a bridge. Yeah. 200 quid, mate. I ain't got problems.
There's a little sparkler coming out of it like you're in a club.
But you're
just in an alleyway.
The tuxedo. I ain't an alcoholic.
There is that thing, though, isn't there, of like, we sort of talked about off foot that when you're sort of like work class or like middle class, and then but if someone posh does something, like when posh people become an alcoholic, it's quite, there's more fun to it whenever I've met a posh alcoholic. Oh, hello, what's going on here?
I got a nice flat to go and hang out. Yeah. get some quality brasses.
they're like in sort of a tweed jacket that's all a bit scruffy, and you're like, oh, you look fun. But then the minute you do see someone just sort of staggering around London in their tracksuit, you're Jesus Christ, mate, well, sort it out.
It's location, isn't it? Like, you know, when I lived in Harlesden, you know, there's a few proper old rough pubs there. And, like, you know, you would just see blokes who are there every day from opening to closing. And, you know, they're just fucked and they look rough as shit.
I remember seeing you.
And then, but then if you take that and move it to a fucking private members bar in Chiswick.
Yeah.
And it's a 60-year-old, like, tubby bloke.
Even though they're damaging their body the same.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? They're acting the same. But it's just they're doing it in a different place and slightly with a different accent.
Yeah.
But do you think there's, like, in a way, with those people, I used to see it when Weatherspoon was in Crystal Palace, there were these old boys who would go in there 7 a.m. until shut. And I'd
before it was open.
Yeah.
4 hours before it was open, it was at the front door.
Like the Christmas
sales. It would open at 7.
Oh, God.
It would open at 7.
What
and
the pub was.
Yeah. And they'd go in there. And I used to think, there is an odd freedom to that. To just go in, that's what my life's going to be. If I would love to just go, I'm just going to go sit in the pub all day and maybe venture to the bookies every now
and then.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is the thing. Like, one of my biggest bugbears of the modern age is this whole sort of, this culture of, like, you've got to get out there and graft, make something of yourself and, like, you know, work hard and all that. Whereas actually, I think even up to about 15 years ago, it used to be everyone should try and get a job and do what they want. But that there is a fallback plan of get on the dole and just drink every day, nip to the bookies, be a bit sad. But, like, you know, actually there was, I think
that's plan A.
That safety net for people in society to be that, I think, was very necessary.
But that does encourage people to not try, though, doesn't it, as well?
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm with Carl on this. That's one of the things that we've lost in the modern era of all this technology and all these influences.
What, dole bludgers?
If you went and you just went, I'm going to go into a pub, I'm going to drink John Smith's.
Yeah.
But I don't think they are free, though. I think the opposite.
I think they're the freest people.
I think it seems free and they think they're free. But
they're freer than someone who's got a really busy 9-to-5 job, surely.
I don't know.
Imagine you've got, say, all right, here's the thing. Imagine you've got
There is the other end of the spectrum where the guy is fucking living to work.
All right, that's what I mean. So imagine you're that
guy. Loads of outgoing.
But even take that guy out of the equation. Imagine you're somebody who's just got a 9-to-5 proper, like, you know, you've got a decent job, but you've not got enough to buy property yet. You're still a slave to your rent.
Most people.
Most people in society, they work hard. They haven't got that much free time. They haven't got that much expendable income. Most of their week is spent working. They're paying their rent, their bills, and that. They've got a bit left over at the end to have a few nights
out. If there's a balance
out
with their social life, that's how people manage it.
But a couple of bits of social life a month.
Go axe throwing on a Thursday evening.
What the fuck is with all the axe throwing at the minute? Why is society crying out? What are they trying to get us to prepare for?
We talked about this a bit recently about that sort of weird new wave of, like, hobbies that don't, or like things, activities that didn't make any sense. Golf that's got, like, graffiti on the wall saying fuck everything.
crazy people.
They spray painted Chairman Mao on the thing, and they're like, down with capitalism. And you're like, cost me 25 quid to get there. £10 to rent
your pub. Trying to sell me a photo for
£8,
fucking 15 quid.
£8 for a pint of fucking neck oil in the place.
Piss off.
But, like, is that, this sort of, there's this fake, you know, wild and crazy sort of shit going on. It's always going to be some rich venture capitalist who owns that business.
There's definitely all of that, yeah.
But what I mean is, I would definitely think the person who's on the dole, going to the pub every day, lives in council housing.
But the dole is only, what's the dole, about 60 quid a week or something?
339 quid a month.
Lucas, what'd you get?
Yeah, it's 60 quid a week.
60 quid a week, right? Yeah,
they can't sustain an alcohol problem, though.
No, but you've got to, what you've got to do with that is invest it. So you've got to buy a quarter of weed and split that up.
Yeah. Start shotting it.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, yeah, you've got to
watch an Andrew Tate.
You've got to have a little few things on the side. But if you've got, you know, if you're an account...
Get a couple of OnlyFans girls on the payroll, you know what I mean?
But yeah,
a little side hustle.
But then that thing, I would say there's still just that slight more freedom in terms of just your time is freer.
Yeah,
what I mean. If you did just want to sit in your council flat watching telly, drinking cans of super cheap cider, you're all right,
mate. But I don't think they're happy. I think they're desperate. No, I'm not saying they're happy. Sad, in fact.
But no, I'd say some
I think
are
they're
happy.
In hell, I'd go be some fast people. To say.
I'd say some are happy. I could be happy about that.
Some are. Guys. I mean, man's been drinking every morning. He's got that on his vision board.
That's all I want.
I love the idea of you putting that to Hannah. You're like, yeah, I'm not really gigging this anymore. Yeah, I'm just going to
get a couple of tins in.
Oh, by the way, the freezer's full of soup. Super tenants now.
The food's all in the sink.
You can't even taste it.
All the vegetables are in the sink thawing out.
Yeah, there's a thing, you know, because it is, I do think of it, like I catch myself, the things that I get down about now and stuff is to do with online and social media and where I put content
porn
out.
Pornhub down and that, yeah.
No, I don't really watch porn or anything. Like, because I was brought up in the generation of porn, when I was in my 20s, I sort of worked out this is going to...
You completed it.
Yeah. This isn't... I was like, this isn't
good. You
tore
your dick off. Couldn't use it no more.
Wore it down to little nubs.
It's a little twiglet. sore and raw.
Someone from Pornhub actually rang me and went, look, mate, we're actually going to have to cut your account.
We're going to have an intervention here, guys.
But all of that, like the content and all of that, and I'd sort of go, oh, that's just a thing in modern life where, because you're like, the whole influencer thing where it's always like, you've got to be up and you're grinding doing this, and then the next video is telling you, you know, you need to be at peace with yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why the fuck am I listening to someone who doesn't know me and I don't know that? Like, there's that Tom Skinner guy, right? Who, this guy is just famous because he just has a fucking breakfast in the morning.
Who is it? Well, I don't know.
Some guy from he was on The Apprentice and he's from Essex and he goes, Bosh! And he sits there and goes, good morning, lovely people. Right. Today I'm tucking into a bit of lamb for breakfast.
Oh, he's in a cafe.
Yeah. And he's like, why don't you go out there and just work on, you know, and we'll have a great day. And you're like, you don't fucking know what I'm going through.
Just because
you're eating a breakfast doesn't mean that's going to inspire me.
But do you not think the fact that you're watching it, you've done your part in, like, you've played, I've never heard of him, so he doesn't annoy me.
Yeah,
but, what I mean? So
why don't
the fact
you
that
not
you...
watch it?
Yeah, but I thrive on spite.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people.
I do watch things that get on my nerves, though.
I have to watch something. And do you know what? He seems like a perfectly nice bloke as well.
Did he have a chicken curry for breakfast the other day? Yeah, I know the guy.
What a weirdo, man.
That's the only thing I've ever seen.
Fucking loser.
Get a Malibu down.
The one he did yesterday, he had a Christmas dinner yesterday. Do you want to see it?
Yeah. Oh, is he the guy? I saw somebody do a tweet about somebody eating 24, like doing a Christmas dinner every morning of December. Is that him?
I'm not sure if that's him.
There he is. Good morning and happy first day, you lovely, lovely people.
It's Lenny Sherman.
That's the big one today. It's the 1st December.
Well, I do recognise him.
All year for the cat to start doing this. The Christmas dinners for breakfast are here. And I can't wait, which means I'll be probably having one of these every morning through December till Christmas, because I absolutely love the Christmas dinner here. It is fantastic. And this is going to keep me going today, because later on we're driving up to Scotland. We've got 499 miles to do in one day just to get up there, spin around.
Mirth control.
And yes, I am tired. And yes, I wish it was in the week. I've got
to drive 3 hours.
So whatever you're doing today, go out there, give it 110%, smash it to pieces. Today's going to be your day. Keep going, guys. Have a blinder. I'm going to tuck in my breakfast.
Why is he acting like you need a Christmas dinner to have the energy to drive to Scotland? He's not walking there.
Yeah.
He's just
seems like a nice enough guy.
There's definitely a demographic for him.
I mean, I wouldn't watch it, you know, if you had a gun to my head. But it's what it is, isn't it? He's doing his thing.
If I walked in a cafe, I'd walk back out with him holding his phone. Talking to his dinner.
But it's just that fake motivation thing that gets someone. Just the idea that you tell someone.
Gary V's a bit hardcore, isn't he?
Oh, he's.
He's got to be on Gary coke.
He's, I don't think he is. I think he's one of those people just.
He
loves.
Owned a bit of Snapchat, didn't he, early on or something.
Who's
like
Gary
V? He's a, this business. Guy, he advises business basically, but he's constantly on social media.
He's just a master at putting content out.
There's he does do some interesting stuff though, like he goes to boot sales and flips stuff. I was watching a bit of that. I mean, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. But there's all of that stuff of like the people who are relentless. If it's like if you just have no shame in life, you will succeed at some things. You know, that's why corporate psychopaths do well.
So it's
the same with social media to an extent. If you're a bit of a corporate psychopath and on social media, that's why influencers, the really famous ones, they're all insane.
Because
they have no way of thinking that
inhibitions.
That one who put up a thing about, oh, my heating's not working, so I've gone to stay at Claridge's or whatever the other day.
And she did have a clothing haul, didn't she?
And everyone was like, this is, most people can't do this. And they're like, that's not my fault.
But her demographic are probably people on the same kind of, in the same kind of ilk.
Maybe, but then also, fair fucks to her. Why can't she go?
Yeah, but also, this goes back to that thing about freedom and like what you think. Like, you know, again, you'd have to compare everything to somebody fucking getting shit faced in a Wetherspoons every day.
But then,
like, there's this idea that these influencers traveling around the world to these exciting places, they've got the greatest life. But did you see that video of that? Remember, was it Coachella, the music festival?
And
they had this like secret VIP party. And it was all like all the best influencers of the world, the biggest influencers and all that. And all the influencers, if you watch their videos, you'd be like, this is the sickest party I've ever seen, man. It's in like, you know, there's a pool and there's cocktails and everyone's just mingling and they're sexy and all that. A
lot of puss.
But somebody put a video like of like basically behind the scenes. Somebody filmed the party basically and put it out.
Yeah.
And it was literally 200
people crying behind the camera.
Attractive people just on their phones.
That was
what it's meant to be. You'd think that like, you'd think the moment the cameras are off, it's all fucking coke and everyone noshing each other
off. They're not fulfilled. They're not happy.
They are such slaves to their phone.
Yeah.
That to me is, I'd rather be pissed in a Wetherspoons.
By
a mile.
I'd say they're both miserable places to be at each end of the spectrum.
Like, you ain't looking at your phone. You're just having a beer with your mate.
You can't afford one.
There's a fruity as well in a Wetherspoons. Yeah. Exactly. You don't have that VIP at coke. I do, because I've met a couple influencers and I know them, and a lot of the time they are the most like content, everything has to be content. You know, like sometimes you meet a comic and they can only explain everything like, oh, that's like that episode of Seinfeld. And you're like, mate, can we live life? I don't need, you know, oh yeah, Louis has a great bit about that. And you're like, I don't.
Anyone who refers to Louis C.K. as Louis, I'm like, that's a red flag. You watch too much comedy, man.
If
you don't know somebody by their name and they're famous, call them by their full name.
I
remember like my ex-wife's, and this is, I'm not digging them out, but this is just like some people do that. Her sister and my brother-in-law, was that what you call him?
Her brother.
They always, her husband, not my ex-wife's husband.
You see what a marriage failed, man.
My ex-wife's sister's husband. But like, because once I started doing comedy and started, you know, doing stuff with some quite well-known comedians, they sort of would refer to them by their first name. And I always found it weird because I wouldn't refer to them by
their first name, even though
I knew them.
I was talking about people
to like, you know, to civilians.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it'd be like, we'd be talking about Russell Howard.
And they'd start calling him Russ.
They'd be like, who is this Julian? like Russell Howard, they'd refer to him as like Russell. And I was always like, that. I find that weird, even if it's somebody who, like, if I was referring to Russell Howard with people that know Russell Howard as well, I'd still say Russell Howard. But when people do, I just always find it weird when people go, just refer to Patrice. Patrice has got a great bit on that. It's like, that's Patrice O'Neill. Let's refer to him by his full name, please. We don't know him.
It is that.
I was talking to Bill about that the other day.
The old Bill.
But I was, you know, with like back to the influence thing, I've met a few of them and they are, it is just, you go, oh, you're just, your whole thing is like, you know, whenever you meet someone whose whole thing is they want to be famous. And I don't mean successful or anything like that, because we all probably have a bit of that drive within us and stuff like that. That's why we're in here podcasting and doing that. So we dance with that devil. But when you meet people whose out and out thing is, I just want to be famous.
And that's it. And that's it. You're so like, empty.
What?
Which
for?
Is also the worst part of it.
Yeah.
Like, what you want is success, a bit of success and some money.
Yes.
And a bit of like, and to be able to sort of do it on your own terms.
Yeah.
The fame.
Get some totty, you know what I mean?
You can't do that anymore. You're not allowed to be famous and do that anymore. Oh, that used to be part of the deal with fame.
You can, you've just got to do it in the right terms. Yeah. Not like the way Julian would.
No. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got to get hashtag you soon trending. Hashtag you next.
Yeah, there would be.
Just start tagging birds in. I'm going to start a whole new movement.
There's this, oh my God.
Pulled my headphones out.
Oh. Just pick them off one by one, like the advent calendar.
You know when
one a day.
You know when people start an industry going, we all know who, but I'm not going to say. Yeah, you want to be like, you want to have that, I want them to know it's me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Head of the news.
Hashtag me.
no apology post, just a video of you smoking a cigar.
Ladies.
But yes, that was, yeah, it is that thing of, I agree, there's no fun in that influencer lifestyle.
No, not at all.
The fame is the worst bit, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
If you want that bit, I'm not saying there's probably some benefits to fame. You know what I mean? But I think on the whole, if that's the only thing you want, you're going for the worst part of it.
Well, whenever I've met people who are, like, there's degrees to fame, you know, and whenever you're with someone recognising you because they enjoy your work
is a cool thing.
And go, oh, hey, mate, I really like this. Thank you very much. Like, the first time I ever got recognised was actually, like, I wanted it to happen, you know, because I'd seen it happen to my dad and stuff. And it was actually very sad because I was in Brixton. I was waiting for a bus at about 1 a.m. to come back from a gig, and this bloke came up to me and went, "Hey, still?" He was like, "Yeah, I'm a massive fan of your comedy," and he had these records. Nice. And I went, "Oh, you went record shopping?" And he was like, "I'll be honest, mate, I've got to shoot off."
Yeah, good job, mate.
And then he walked away.
Yeah, I ain't really got the time, mate. Sorry.
that was the first time I ever got recognised. I tried to initiate a chat, and he just went, "Nah, mate, fucking, I don't want to be pals with you." Jesus.
Yeah. Right, familiar. You're weirdo.
He just fucked off.
I think the best type of fame, you know, like, is in terms of comedy, the people I always think that must be a sweet life. You look at people like Kev Bridges, Mickey Flanagan, people like that, where they sort of do arena tours because they got to that point and they're amazing at comedy. They keep their sort of legitimate quality of comedy, but they come and do their arena tours and then you don't really see them for about a year or 18 months or two years. Because it's like, that's all they want to do, man. They like just having their life as well.
There's still a lot of stress though, I bet.
Sure, once you're in that touring schedule and getting the show together, but I think they've got very good work-life balances, which I think a lot of famous comedians don't,
like,
they lose that.
Like Flanagan sit on a beach for a few months, I bet, wouldn't he?
Well, yeah. I think a lot of famous comedians, once they get the fame, they lose that work-life balance. They think, I've got to hold on to this. Whereas I like the fact that some of the others sort of go, no, actually, I've got a nice position now. I just can just hopefully maintain it without trying to ruin my life and sort of stay on the horse too hard.
Flanagan, I think he's quite, from what I've heard, he's quite known. Like, I really like, obviously, really love Mickey Flanagan, but I've heard he was like a circuit comic for years.
Oh, mate, when I started, he was like one of the best
like
headliners you'd ever see, man. He was just rocking gigs left, right, and centre. And it was just, as I was starting, he was just like almost, it was that thing when they used to refer to like him and Michael McIntyre as being too big for the circuit.
Right.
If you do like the store with them, and they were just, they couldn't go anywhere but last because they were unfollowable.
True closers.
And then within about 6 months of that's when they got famous.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That was that thing as well though. Like there was almost this thing, which I think, because I'm 26, so there's people who start now who are my age, but I'm not in the same year group as them, even though we're the same age.
You were proper young, weren't you?
I was 16, which was too young. And then, but I always came through as like, you kind of respect the, so I don't know if you have too much comedy chat on your podcast, so sorry if we're going for this, but like,
we're going to cut all this out.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, just leaving all the Me Too stuff. That's what the people are here for.
It's only a 5-minute podcast. No, it's interesting. I can't say anything that don't sound sarcastic. Sounded really cutting.
No, this is really good, man.
Great stuff, man.
When I came in, it was always like there was this thing of you respect the circuit. You get good. I think you can make a mistake on the circuit of like, I did a Just the Tonic Birmingham the other week.
That's a mistake.
Well,
not really. I love Just the Tonic.
I like Just the Tonic.
Love Daryl.
But the gig is like an old Jonglers gig.
It's one of the tougher ones, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was on first, and it went fine, but it was like a bit of crowd control and stuff. And I was like, you could make the mistake if you were doing these gigs every weekend of convincing yourself you were a good comedian when you're not. You're actually good at talking to drunk people.
You can't, you could not help yourself if you were only doing that sort of room week in, week out. You couldn't not tailor your material towards it.
100%.
You ain't going on and doing a 10-minute fucking, you know, sort of shaggy dog story about whimsical, whatever.
Yeah.
Because you physically can't, you won't get
to the end. You definitely have to call someone a cunt or something.
Yeah. And that just gets into your writing. It affects your style.
It's like the Jonglers guys fell into that, didn't they?
Oh, man, those guys.
That's what I mean. You couldn't put them. I mean, you could. I mean, I've done some gigs that are a bit more, you know, alternative when one of them does sort of slightly cross over.
Yeah.
And it can do well, but sometimes it can also be like, you know, the audience. You couldn't chuck fucking. Trying to think of like a proper Jonglers, like
Miles Crawford.
A Miles Crawford, you know, someone like that, you know, somebody who just was like sort of a, you know, crowd control. You couldn't chat them on at the Moth Club, could you?
No. But then
people would cry. The audience would just be crying. What's going on?
Imagine trying to get those old Jonglers comedians to understand.
Why does he call my job shit?
We don't.
I'm really proud of my outfit.
We don't say ladies and gentlemen. We say they, thems before we bring them on and all of that stuff. Which is fine, you know, there should be places for that.
That's what I mean. There's a different. The circuit has split into like these, like, you know, comics can now do gigs that are sort of suited to them.
But the newer guys coming through, like, there's more of them, and I see them. Like, I was doing an open mic night last night, like I did Top Secret.
Oh, you dropped back down.
I got relegated. It's like football, innit? I got kicked out of the league.
You went into administration.
And then, loads of them, I got it. They were filming their sets for clips and stuff, and I was like, you should not be letting anyone know you're doing this.
Because
they're learning at the beginning.
Learning, get good. And I see these newer people come through and they've been going 3-4 years and they want to put a clip up of them doing some gig. They're not playing to the audience in front of them. They're playing to Instagram. I'm like, that's why you're not getting on at the Glees or the Stores of these places, because you're neglecting the very thing that this is. That this is live. That's what's exciting.
But I do think sometimes there is a place for that. There's some people that have sort of bypass the circuit by doing that. So I think newer comics now see there are different avenues. And I think some people would probably think, do you know what? I think if I can just get a clip going.
But learn the trade first.
That's when you're new and excited and you don't, that's not something you even consider. You don't care about that shit, man. So I think I don't really have any issue with that. I think what they're doing is thinking, you know, they've seen the way the wind is blowing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like people who are big on Instagram and that are now going to sell more tickets than people that work their way up through the circuit. By that is a matter of fact, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way the world has changed. But I think if you're a newer comic now, it obviously that shorter route does look much more alluring. Mm. Why wouldn't you? If you could take a shortcut, I'm lazy as shit, man. If I'd have started out and I could see a shortcut, I would have taken a shortcut without a shadow of
a doubt.
There's
no longevity in it, and it's important, I think.
Maybe not, but it depends.
It's important to, you know, to play those Just the Tonic gigs and do those things, because I have what people like see as an evil agency behind me and stuff, and I came through nepotism because of my dad and all that shit. But the first thing they said to me was like, you need a bulletproof 20, like you need a 20 you can do at the club, and that's going to take like 6 to 7 years of gigging relentlessly.
That's good advice, though, isn't it?
Like that, and to get that is so much work. I was talking to an open mic one time, and he's talking about, oh, I'm doing an hour in this. I'm like, how long have you been going, man? 18 months, I'm going to do an hour and film it. I went, don't do that. I was like,
that's a bit too.
I was like,
for some people that works for. I remember Adam Rowe doing that early on.
But he gigged and gigged and gigged.
He put the graft in.
But he didn't put an hour show out for years.
He filmed one, didn't he, in a theatre? He weren't going that long.
No, he was going about 7 years still.
Was he?
Yeah, Adam.
Adam was knocking around the Northwest for a while. He stuck up there for a while and just got to know what he was doing. We didn't see him down here for a while because he didn't come down for a while.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing that I think that's a good thing that. that some people, like comics from the Northwest, do. Is they get good there they ever
I mean, Adam's
down
a grafter,
to
though, isn't he?
Yeah, but that thing of like, and you can do it the same in London or anywhere. Like, you sometimes, I see it whenever I go to like Scotland or sometimes in the Northwest, is someone comes on and they start doing a bit of local, and you're like, the minute you leave this street,
material isn't going to work.
And one thing that I say that makes you, is an advantage but a disadvantage as a London comic, I don't know if you guys feel this. When I go to Glasgow or anywhere else, if I do material about London, even if it is just mentioning the word London, people switch off because they're like, look at this fucking Londoner coming up trying to tell
me.
Why should they give a shit about?
But
when you see like a comic from like Glasgow or Liverpool and they come down to London, they can play on their stereotype of where they're from. Because it's like, oh, here's this. So you as a...
You can if you're being self-deprecative, I guess.
Yeah, but I think in a way it can
it's harder because our stereotype, you know, other stereotypes seem to hold a bit more weight.
Even if you're working class London, they can still think like you're a snob.
I would say that's the funny thing. If you go to like, I've always found that going to like the north and northwest, and like not
is it because they're all tramps?
Yeah,
it's because they're all scum.
No, but like it's that thing where like we go to the north.
Not really, my northern brother.
We go to the north. Like, everyone in the north thinks everyone from London's posh. Like, and everyone in London.
No
matter where you are, you could be a fucking posh. Like you could be a poor Londoner, poorer than any of them, and they think you're posh for some reason. Yeah, but the funny flip side is. Everyone from the north, if they come to London, no matter, they could be a millionaire.
Yeah,
and Londoners think they're poor.
Poor bastard
from the north. Oh, mate, you're all right. It's a flip side. It's literally the opposite stereotype that we have of them.
There is a little bit of a divide, isn't there? I guess
it's not, but it's not hard. You know, you can gig anywhere, and as long as you know what you're doing, it's fine.
I love it up there. To be honest,
same here.
It's so, they're such good, and their comedy scene at the moment. Like, I really love the way that they've done everything up there, and for us to hear like replicate it as well. That's a really cool thing because I think that's the other thing with London. Like there was and this isn't just comedy based. I hate the idea that there's an industry gatekeeping thing within anything, that you kind of have to do a dance and go, all right, I have to, whether you want to be a musician or you want to be this, anything in an artistic endeavor, there's a bunch of people who are producers, and lots of producers are great, but most producers are uncreative people who like to think they're creative. So they take your idea
and they make it shit
because they've done a media studies course and then they go, oh, you can't say that because that's offensive or that might upset some people. And you're like, yeah, it might, but the people who like it will really like it. It'll be funny.
But also, I think a lot of it isn't even that. I think a lot of times producers, they don't mean to ruin it, but I think producers sometimes make something that could be really funny shitter because they feel like they have to change it.
They have to validate their job as well.
But actually, a good producer, I think, has the ability
gets the
to,
best out of the artist.
Absolutely. Whereas I think sometimes producers think they've got to put their aura in a bit too much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think it's even cynical. I think it's almost like a sort of subconscious need to have your say.
Yeah, I've worked with some really good ones who, and what I've noticed they do that's really good is you'll be telling them an idea and they'll ask you a question and then I might get, I've drank this one.
Oh, is that your one?
Let's all just share from different ones. No, I've had that one. Can I have that one as well?
Thank you. We're in London, mate. We've got loads.
we're not in Manchester. Yeah.
We're drinking out a puddle. but they would like, whenever I'd put an idea in a writer's room or anything like that, they'll then question it. And then if I didn't have an answer...
Who employed him?
Yeah. Why is the cleaner jumping?
Someone ordered an Uber.
they'd like make you question it and you'd go, I could then end up getting frustrated because they're not understanding it. But the process of making something is you're like, actually, if I'm not explaining it correctly, that means my idea is probably shit.
Which is also,
I have made some fucking terrible content in my time. That's like another part of the content.
We were going to get onto this. Yeah, we got a question on the group.
Let's pull it up, please. Pull it up, Jamie.
it is. But that is the way the world is going. It's going to be. Yeah, it's all content driven.
I wonder how much of it as well. Like what I find like in London at the moment, this thing, and this is just for your listeners to say, and not me. Do people listen to this podcast? Do they feel when they go to a comedy show now, especially if they go in a work setting? I notice I do Top Secret quite a lot, and I notice. The audiences there can be quite sensitive, but people come up afterwards and be like, I really enjoyed the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're like, oh, I'm on a works night.
Right.
And you're like, oh, fuck. You're like, office culture at the moment seems horrible.
Well, I don't think, I think, I remember, like, I worked in an office, and I, we actually had an, we went to a comedy, we had a comedy show, work, Christmas do one year. We had it at the, where was it? What's the, is it the Dorchester? There's a there's a hotel just on, like, Hyde Park Corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a big functions room, and we went to, like, a big work do there. There was about 100 from our office, and there was about another 100 from another office, another 100 from another office.
Oh, my God, was it like...
Banquet a... seating. And all I remember is Rudy Liquid was one of the acts, because I was battered. And this was just when I was just doing my first open spot, so I didn't tell anyone, right? Yeah. And I didn't know any of the comedians either. And one of the guys from my office got kicked out for having an argument with Rudy Liquid when he was on stage. But, like, it was that thing of, yeah, when you obviously you're there as a group and you just want to, you do sort of slightly temper what you're, you don't want to laugh at the worst.
I think
thing.
It's always been like that.
Sat next to your HR manager. Mm. And that's always been the way. That was,
that was
17 years ago or something.
Yeah. Well, maybe this stuff is just like, we just like to act like it's new because it's fun.
Yeah, of course.
And I do that as well. I've fucking made things in my time because, you know, edginess sells and things like that. I'm not a particularly edgy comic at all, but, like, you can be like, oh, look, someone's saying something for this. And I'm just using a marketing tool. I'm not really.
Yeah, you know,
and. But that like, when you went there and there was, like, 300 people from other offices, was it sort of like they were, like an away day?
It was a bit. Like, there was definitely a little bit of sort of, you know...
You're not totally relaxed.
Losers.
Yeah, you turn up in your Stone Island. start giving it to the accounts team.
The head office.
Start making up about how much of a ruckus it really was when you're back. No, I took 7 of them on, but you know what I mean? Because fair play, if I knock you down, I'm going to stop. That's how was brought up, that's how I was raised. I hate that. That's what I hate about football at the moment, man. Like, I'm gonna have to stop going to it and stuff, because I used to, when I was like a teenager,
who's
and wanted
team?
To fit in Crystal Palace, when I was a teenager and wanted to fit in and stuff, that stuff I'd make up, that did that sort of to sound cool.
Yeah.
And there was a game on, I go to the feet quite a lot, but I had to go do a gig. So I was going, I live quite close to Sellers Park. I was going to Normal Junction Station, and there was these Saints fans who came in the shop, and they were hammered. And they were talking about to me, trying to talk, yeah, we've been kicked out of the game because, you know, fucking, and they were doing all that. You know, it was better back in the day when people let you have a scrap. And I was like, no, but it wasn't, was it?
No,
because I've gone to watch the football.
Yeah.
I haven't gone to watch the scrap.
I don't know if there was ever a time they were allowed to have a scrap.
No,
never. I mean, it's always been illegal.
When I went to Amsterdam for the Champions League semi-final, what, 3-4 years ago now, David Alfie Ward, comedian.
Lovely.
And a few guys from the Fighting Cock podcast. We were drinking in the bar, probably, was it during the match? Half time, or maybe before. It might have been before the match, actually. And basically a bloke came over to ask for a light, and he was young. He was like 18. And he was all...
Tell him to fuck off.
He had a black eye. He was a big, tall bloke. Right. And he was a proper, like, all right, let's go buy a light. Gave him a light, and he started talking to us. Yeah, he goes, oh, we got here last night, and we had a fucking dust up with all the bloody IAX ultras and all that. And we were like, all right, yeah, cool. Okay.
Catch this. And then
threw him into the canal.
And he was just giving it all like the big one, you know what I mean? And then he started going, yeah, he goes, yeah, my dad used to be a proper, like, one of the top hooligans and all that. He goes, he's on a lifetime ban from Tottenham. And then David Alfie Ward just went, well, what's the point then? Like that.
Yeah.
And this kid was like, what? He goes, well, what's the point? Like, you ain't a Spurs fan if you're banned, are you? You can't be a fucking fan if you've gone and got yourself banned for life. You can't even go to the matches anymore. Mm. And he was like, yeah, no, but like, and he just tried to justify it.
Yeah,
and within about 2 minutes, and then we all sort of joined in and were saying to him, mate, you're not a Tottenham fan, because you're not going for Tottenham. You're going for a fight. And within about 2 minutes of talking to this, like, 17, 18-year-old,
he
basically had, like, this sort of existential crisis where you could see he was
knocked,
like...
Knocked you both out.
But he was just like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, I know, and he just couldn't really
justify
it.
Probably helped him.
I hope so.
It's a difficult age.
Imagine being raised by
his dad. They're the most dangerous age, though, when
dad.
They're becoming men, that
That's
ego.
Imagine going
must have been the worst.
It's like in jails, like the most violent jails are like the young offenders ones. It's that age,
prove
isn't it?
Themselves.
Yeah. Right. Just becoming a man. You don't. The consequences. It's why everyone's getting stabbed at that age. There's no consequence in your head.
Yeah. Imagine going to Amsterdam and your existential crisis doesn't come from a mushroom trip.
I know.
But from some Spurs fans that you've the lighter off.
Telling you to pipe it down.
Yeah, why do you have your free cut? Too much weed and mushrooms and brasses. No. So that talked to me about my dad
coked up Spurs fans.
I was boasting
gave me
about
a real talking to.
Boasting about my loser of a dad.
Yeah. But that age, man, that age where you're a young guy, it's a dangerous age, you know, because you're trying to find yourself. You think you have to prove yourself in masculinity and all those things. And like, fuck me, man. Like, some people like a good for like one of a lad I know is like ranked fifth in the world at jiu-jitsu, right, in his division. Owen Flanagan, and he is just the most stoically calm.
Yeah,
couldn't give off.
It's proper martial arts vibe, isn't it?
Some of them, I know a few. Like that's quite a myth, I think, sometimes, because I know a few people who train martial arts who will drop at the drop of the hat happily.
Yeah. The best of them, I bet.
John Jones will at any point throw an elbow into his.
I reckon
wife.
Conor McGregor like, as well. Yeah.
Like those guys. Like, so this myth that there's like this. Oh, you know, the more you learn to fight, the calmer you come. Now, if you're a bit of a prick and you learn to fight, you're a prick.
But I think with a professional fighter, though, they know about fighting. The dangerous guy is the guy that, like, will just fucking don't really know, just got this idea in his head and will just stab someone.
Yeah, and there's there is a thing as well of, like, I think as well, my mate put it well one time, he's like, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Like, someone who's been training for a year or two who can now fight.
They watch UFC, you know what I mean?
And they can now fight a little bit, doesn't realise, like, if you throw a combination on a drunk fella and his head hits off the floor, you're going to kill him.
Yeah.
Like, that, there is that hyper.
I mean, my fists are lethal weapons, do you know what I mean?
To your dick.
To my dick and anus.
But it would... Let's not lie. It would
when
be...
they touch the steering wheel of a car.
When I'm hitting my kids.
It would be cool to do, you know, it would be a cool podcast story to be like, I did kill a person outside a bar, that, you know, and you'd really spice up.
I've watched some interviews of guys that have done that, though, on YouTube. It's like, I killed a man and he's just lived with regret his whole life. He just punched someone once and they died.
I wouldn't.
I wonder if the camera went off, he got a bit of clout, though. By
the way, that was a good one. Right, that's the end of this week's public episode. We hope you enjoyed it. What happens now, Julian?
They can, if they want to hear the rest of the episode, they can go over to patreon.com/wearetvi.
There you go. Once you've signed up there, you can hear the rest of the episode. You can hear all the old Patreon episodes, exclusives, whatever.
It's 45p a week.
Is it? Mm. That's cool. Mm. I didn't know that.
Easy life.
There we go. It's even cheaper than I thought. So do that. And but if not, don't worry. You can listen to next week's public episode when it's released. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're actually changing the podcast. I think you're... 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 I think